Hide your kids. Lock the doors. You're listening to HR's most dangerous podcast. Chad Soash and Joel Cheeseman are here to punch the recruiting industry right where it hurts. Complete with breaking news, brash opinion, and loads of snark. Buckle up, boys and girls. It's time for the Chad and Cheese podcast.
Oh, yeah. Doogie, doogie, doogie. What's up, everybody?
It's not him. It's not him. You,
what? Neil Patrick Harris is on the show, right?
No, it's not Neil Patrick Harris. It's just it's Neil Harrison.
Well, I've been told a handful of lies today. Welcome, everybody. I am Joel Cheeseman, joined as always by my co-host, Chad Soash. This is the Chad and Cheese podcast. Chad, tell him what he's won today.
Well, Neil Harrison, what you've won is the opportunity to talk about stupid shit on the Chad and Cheese podcast and or really cool shit as well. Today we have not Neil Patrick Harris. We have Neil Harrison, who is the lead consultant for NH237. This reminds me of, remember Oaktown 357? They had like a couple of, like Juicy was one of their songs back in the 90s.
I thought it was an area code for New Hampshire. Is that not NH237?
It could be. But anyway, Neil has a very long list of pretty much areas that he's worked. He was in TMP Worldwide. Now the new, what, Radency? Redundancy? I can't remember. Anyway. He's head of employer brand and insight there for like 12 some years. Neil, tell us more about you. What are we missing? Give us that long walk on the beach kind of Twitter bio.
So you don't want to hear about how I met your mother.
That's not bad. See, that's that not bad. A British dry wit to start the show. That's nice.
I thought I'd start with a meter gun. So, hi guys, it's really nice to be here. So, I've been working in the field of employer branding for a good chunk of time, actually. The last 15 or so years, as you suggested, working as head of employer branding and insight at TMP, not the ones who've been rebranded Radiancy or whatever you want to call it.
Oh, really?
No.
Raid and C. That's
yeah.
what I think. It's the, but, the but capital, it's not those guys the capital anyway. Rioters were saying that.
And I guess my work involves a number of facets in terms of really focusing on the EVP. So an organization's why, and in normal times, non-COVID times, we're dealing with a lot of very competitive employment marketplaces. So organizations have to be objective, stand aside and understand what is it that good candidates respond to, what is it about this organization that they have to join. And I do a lot of that work in terms of speaking to senior stakeholders, talking to key employee audiences, and trying to understand what's different, what's unique about the employment experience they're bringing to life. And I've been doing that for a number of years, left TMP about 3 or 4 years ago and set up NH237 Consulting. It's fairly obvious what the word stands for, so I won't spend too much time focusing on that.
Are you 237 years old? I mean, what's the 237 for? It's not that obvious, Neil.
Well, let's highlight it's for Neil Harrison because our listeners aren't that bright. Yeah, they might not. So Neil Harrison
is reasonably self-explanatory.
Is it the number of women you've had in your life? Like, what is the 237?
Neil Patrick Harris, as you well know, doesn't have that many women in his life. I'm a little bit disappointed. So 237 is a very complicated algorithm that relates to talent acquisition. You probably know, you guys, I wouldn't insult my audience by going over that again. So yeah, NH237, I work with organizations domestically in the UK and more internationally. Again, trying to understand what is it about the essence of an organization, how it ties in with an organization's vision, its missions, its values, and trying to bring a why, an employment why, to different audiences. It's a fascinating field. For my sins, I really, really enjoy it. And it's good to come here and talk to you guys.
Neil, I'm sorry. I'm going to play stupid. I don't know the algorithm of 237 and how it plays into employment branding.
It's on the employment brand periodic table, Joel.
All right, let's just put this in the show notes. We'll talk about it after the show now. Let's go into the state of the world. COVID has obviously turned employment branding on its head. It's sort of reformed what companies need to talk about and what they need to offer folks. We've certainly talked about on the show how companies like Chipotle are offering, you know, mental health benefits that weren't there. But so what are companies doing? What are the questions they're asking you, and what are some of the answers that you're giving them?
Yeah, there's very little positive come out of COVID and the lockdowns and what have you. But in an odd way, there's a simplicity and a clarity that COVID has delivered to employer branding. So the way an organization, any organization, is treated is its people, its employee base, since this onset of COVID, effectively is their talent brand for the next several years. For me, it's really hard to come back reputationally if an organization is treated its people in an unsupportive, uncommunicative manner. I think for a lot of organizations, it will be a slight temptation to see the current marketplace as a buyer's market and maybe disregard the employment experience they provide. I think that will rebound on them significantly. And certainly in the UK marketplace, we've seen a real kind of polar divide. So some organizations have been exemplary. The example you gave is fantastic. And we've seen organizations reaching out, being supportive, listening, really caring for the employee well-being, that whole mental process. And just as a slight tangent, I've got a horrible feeling there's going to be a mental scarring that attaches itself to an awful lot of us as a result of what's happened during COVID and the lockdowns. And that'll be fascinating to see how the better employers support their people, whether that's supporting them at home or supporting them in a new office environment there.
Say a little more about the mental scarring. Is that loneliness, depression? What are we talking about?
Yeah, it's all the good stuff. It's going to depend entirely on how people react to potentially being alone, or indeed potentially being in a house, a flat with a partner you don't want to be, with a whole bunch of small children making an awful lot of noise. It depends entirely on your environment. But I think for the better employers, there's that ability to reach out from screen to screen. My daughter, for example, she's an engineer. She's back at home living with us. Her employer couldn't have been better. It's an international organization, Canadian owned, and they've been supportive. They've nurtured. They've listened to people. They've sent little packages home. They've been fantastic. And, you know, as a father looking at how my daughter's doing, I can't be more positive in terms of endorsing what they've been about. And there've been other organizations who've just done the opposite, who've have frankly either put their people on furlough, made them redundant, and treated them really abysmally. And that's the essence for me of their employer brand for the next 2 or 3 years. So in the stories that an organization's people tell over the next 6 to 12 months, that's the definition of their employer brand. And it's going to be really hard for certain organizations to come back from that. And they have to be open, they have to be honest about maybe some of their failings. And again, it's about how they tell those stories.
We've done a shitty job of telling stories thus far, though. That's the biggest issue. And I'm not just talking about companies. Yeah. I'm talking about countries, right? The United States in itself has done a very bad job in selling that this is a health crisis that has mm-hmm. impacted the economy, not the other way around, right? So that's number one. Number two, now we have in Ohio, a state that's just next door to us here in Indiana, mm-hmm. 60% of medical staff in nursing homes have declined to take the vaccination. The employers and the states and the federal government need to have a brand around this to ensure the only way we're getting back to work, Neil, is to be able to get the goddamn shot if you're an essential worker. But some of these essential workers are turning it down. What can employers do to be able to help, because they're going to have to mandate that these shots are taken if you're coming back into the office, right? What can they do?
Yeah, I think it's a massive issue. You talk about mandating and making it obligatory. Certainly in the UK, that's a non-starter. I think it's about education as much as anything else. I think there's a war being won. Certainly looking at our media, I'm fascinated to see the balance of how they're playing the virus. And up until the beginning of this year, so come March and April last year, there was lots of focus on hospitals, people on ventilators, lots of doom and gloom, kind of scaring people, if you like. Then there's big kind of lockdowns, and then the whole thing eased up. And for me, there was too much easing up of that in the media. So all the health issues weren't really being played front and center. That's changed since the beginning of this year. So we're back to seeing a whole lot of people struggling in hospitals. And actually, those people who are patients and obviously really, really struggling, they're actually on camera talking about their kind of battles with breathing. And I think that sense of education and seeing very ordinary people who are neither 80 plus, not overweight, normal people doing normal jobs, having caught that through no fault of their own in that situation, I think that's there's a sense that the tide is turning there. And certainly as far as the UK is concerned, those kind of stats that you're talking about probably don't necessarily exist. We've probably 10% of people have already got that first jab, and we'll see how the rest of that goes. But you can't mandate people, you can't force people, because if you force people to try and do something, a lot of them are just going to do the opposite.
Problem is, if you don't mandate it, then how are you going to get them back into a scenario where there's huge risk that could be associated with them coming back to the office? We're talking about people dying. We're not talking about somebody prospectively getting a fucking paper cut, for God's sakes, right? And on LinkedIn, they actually did a poll that had about 80,000 respondents. And the question was, should employees be required to take a COVID-19 vaccination before returning to the office? Only 36% said yes. I mean, that to me is a corporate branding issue as well as a country branding issue. And this is going to be different, as I think you just were talking about, from Europe to the United States. And if you're a multinational type of an organization, it sounds like you have to get a COVID brand ASAP.
We Americans don't do well with mandates, Neil. I didn't know if you knew this about us.
I'm kind of assuming not. The UK, are we any different? Well, probably slightly more inclined to stand in line. But I think it's the way it's like any story. It's the way it's told, and you have to talk to audiences about the how to play that. What's acceptable? What's not? Do you scare the ass off people, or are you much more conciliatory? Do you have a lot softer notion, a lot softer tone, and you go out to people? But I mean, 80,000 is a massive kind of study. I'll tell you a little piece of research I did 3 or 4 months ago. So I researched a bunch of people who were in candidate audiences but were currently working. So they weren't desperate for a new job. So I asked a bunch of questions, and one of which was, you've got a choice, okay? So your next job, would you prefer to move to an organization that had treated its people well during COVID, but which had some kind of challenges? Or would your next job be with an organization that's doing really, really well, but hadn't treated its people well during COVID? The response to that was fascinating. So 93% of people would rather go to an organization that supported, was there for its people, even if it might have some challenges ahead, rather than the other way around. So just 7% of people wanted to work with an organization that might have been doing really well, but treated its people really, really poorly.
We'll get back to the interview in a minute. But first, we have a question for Andy Katz, COO of Next. Andy, if a company wants to actually come to Next and utilize your database and target texting candidates, I mean, how does that actually work?
Right. So we have the software to provide it two different ways. If an employer has their own database of opted in text messages, whether it's through their ATS, we can text on their behalf. Or we have over 8.5 million users that have opted into our text messaging at this point. So we can use our own database. We can dissect it by, obviously, by geography, by function, any which way. And sometimes we'll even parse the resumes of the opted in people to target certifications. So we really can, you know, dive really deep if they want to hone in on, you know, just give me the best 100 candidates that I want to text message with and have a conversation back and forth with, versus going and saying I need 30,000 retail people across the country. And that's more of a, you know, yes, no text messaging back and apply.
For more information, go to hiring.next.com. Remember, that's next with the double X, not the triple X. Hiring.next.com.
Greetings from Evergreen Podcasts. We're rolling out a listener survey and we want to hear from you. The information in the survey will help us gather statistics and in turn make our shows more appealing to advertisers. I know most people don't like ads, but this is one of the only ways our shows make money and help keep their lights on. We promise it will only take a few minutes, but the impact on our podcasts will be tremendous. As a token of our appreciation, we'll randomly select one lucky participant each month to win an exclusive merchandise package from Evergreen Podcasts. Head to evergreenpodcast.com/listener survey to help a show and possibly get some free stuff for doing so. We can't thank you enough for the support. Now back to the show.
Let's talk about carrots and sticks for a second. Where are you on incentives, incentives or punishments? In terms, like, are you for giving cash bonuses if you get a shot before coming in, or there's some sort of a punishment if you don't get a shot in some way? Where do you fall on that?
Oh, fascinating question. I mean, a lot of it is going to be, it's going to be market driven, I suspect. And if you're a situation where the labor market is really tough, which it is on both sides of the Atlantic, then effectively the power is maybe the wrong word, but employers have the whip hand there. So they have the power, whether that's unspoken or spoken power, to exert that kind of thing. I think they'd really, really struggle in so many marketplaces. And you talk about the Dutch, and those guys are out rampaging on the streets because they don't want to be locked down anymore. I suspect if you introduce that kind of thing, there'd be even more rioting. I don't think people can use the stick in terms of getting people back in the office. I think it's about presenting the office as safe. And for me, there's a whole different subject there about how do employers recreate that sense of community back in the workplace. So for a lot of organizations, you've got empty offices, there's communities completely broken down there. So how do you recreate that? And there's lots of different facets to that in terms of the physical office space, the health and safety, the kind of sociological, that kind of giving people the confidence to go back into the workplace. How do you manage workflow, but also just literally making it very clear that this is a safe place to return to. Now, whether you do that in terms of saying, look, to come back into our office, thou shalt have this injection, whether you like it or not. I think it'll be interesting for some organizations that have direct customer contact, because if I'm a customer, do I want to go to a workplace that I'm going to come into contact with people who haven't had the vaccination? Yeah. Probably not. Could you see some litigation down the line? So if I catch COVID, and you guys, I've been in touch with you guys, I've been getting a hamburger from you guys or buying a shirt from you guys, and you haven't mandated that you guys have a vaccination, all of a sudden, am I going to be suing you as a result?
It's pronounced cheeseburger, Neil, not hamburger. So I want you to put the carrots and stick away for a second. I want you to bring out your crystal ball. Let's go 3 to 5 years in the future. Do we go back to the office? Do we stay at home? certainly we've talked about on the show of companies are never going back. It's too expensive to have commercial real estate. They're saving so much money at home. Is it like the young people go to an office for a while and the old people show up sometime? What does this thing look like 3 to 5 years from now?
Yeah, I think there's been a natural reaction to say it's the end of the office, it's the end of the workplace, who needs it? You know, we're doing okay, we've made the best of a bad situation. I absolutely endorse your point about age, and again, going back to my poor daughter there, so she's 25. What does she want to do? She wants to meet people in offices, she wants to go out with beers with people, she wants that whole sense of fun and collaboration and that whole vibe there. Does her considerably older father want to do that necessarily? To a far lesser degree. But having said that, just from an ideas perspective, just in terms of generating thought processes, there's nothing like interacting, even in scenarios like this, there's nothing like contact with other people to spark thoughts, to come up with different concepts and ideas. And that sense of collaboration, I think a whole bunch of people have missed. And not to go back to the office, I don't think that it's not binary. People talking about a blended working solution whereby, you know, you might go back 2 days a week, you might go back 3 days a week, you might work 1 week and off the next week. I think organizations will find their own way through this. Again, it often goes back to your own personal situations. If you're living in a nice house with a nice garden, you've got a nice personal relationship there, you might want to spend more time at home. If those things aren't in place, you're not possibly living in the nicest of home environments from all sorts of different perspectives. Do you really want to spend additional time there? I'm guessing probably not. So it will depend on so many different facets there. I mean, certainly, well, we were staggered in the UK about, well, why were we staggered? Not at all, but pollution levels dropped like a stone as soon as no one was going to the office. So no one's getting in cars and buses and trucks and what have you. So all of a sudden, the skies are clear, the air is nice to breathe. And what do we want to do? We want to go straight back to that. And all of a sudden, but actually because nobody really fancied public transport for obvious reasons, people then realised that actually if they got in their cars, then they wouldn't be sat next to someone they didn't really fancy sitting next to, they didn't have a mask on. And so all of a sudden we're back using our cars again. So do you know what? It's really not clear, but people like people. People want that sense of company. And for a whole generation to miss out on that, I just don't think it's going to happen at all.
Isn't it important that companies start engineering that whole idea now on what they're going to do, the actual strategy on getting people either back in the office, either in a hybrid scenario or what have you, so that they can build a brand and a talent acquisition strategy around that? Because if talent acquisition doesn't know in next year, let's say 2022, whether they're going to be a back in the office type of organization, an at home organization, or a blended organization, it is hard to be able to sell what you don't know.
No, exactly. And I think that applies to so many different things. I think people, as much as possible, want clarity, want a sense of what the next 6 to 12 months are going to look like. Now, for a lot of organizations, absolute clarity in that circumstance is impossible. But people want a sense of what it's all about and what ultimately they're working on, what they're contributing to that sense of direction. So just to say, look, we're going to play it by ear for the next 6 months. We hope it'll go right, but who knows? It isn't really the clarity and reassurance that people are looking for. They want to have a broad idea of what the futures look like and where they're going. Now, whether that's an organization pivoting and changing what its business is like, or how it goes about its business, or what, as you were suggesting, where it goes about that business, that's one thing. But organizations that just leave that open, I think, are going to be at disadvantage. And that's I wrote a blog just this week, actually, about ripples and how organizations, whether that's a global organization, those ripples reaching effectively around the world, or actually just those ripples reaching people's individual houses and flats is another thing. And the importance of internal communications and delivering the people brand, the talent brand, whatever you want to call it, locally or indeed globally, is more important, frankly, than it's ever been before. And just to neglect that and assume people are okay, or assume that because unemployment figures are going up, then actually, do we really need to engage with our people? Do we really need to look out for them? Certainly, some organizations are taking that option. Is absolutely wrong. And again, going back to the start of this, people's employer brand, people's talent brand is being forged as we speak by the decisions they're making in terms of support, nurturing, and communication. So if you're not getting those ripples, those magic ripples of communication out to your folk, whether it's in individual laptops or it's to whole countries, then you're going to be at a disadvantage. And whether it's about the office environment, whether it's about vaccination, whether it's about engagement levels, whether it's about really making sure that people are being listened to and their voices heard, all of those things apply in equal measure.
Neil, you said most people like people or people like people, and I actually hate most people, but that's a separate podcast.
Join the club.
Yeah. So and I hate people more ever since I've been only talking to Chad for a year. But I want to talk about some of the technologies that have come out. And as Chad and I talk about companies and startups that have been funded over the last year, they are very focused on the work from home phenomenon, right? And whether it's video recruiting or, chatbots or job fairs online, they're all trying to solve this problem of we're not going to get back together again for a while, if at all. So I'm curious your take on technology. You know, companies that want to, build engagement in a work from home environment, companies that are, whether it's video. A story that came to my mind was that culturally or like women feel like they aren't heard as well on Zoom calls because they're less likely to interrupt people to get their voice heard. So I'm curious, are these technologies going to be longstanding, or are they going to fail in building engagement and actual nuances of human engagement going into the future?
I think, as going back to that original question about, blended working, are we working at home, are we working in the office, it's going to be a combination thereof. And I think some of the innovation, and that's one of the really, really positive things, again, about what's happened is, and the guy who owns Microsoft, was talking about there's been 2 to 3 years worth of technological development in 2 to 3 months. He said that last year, when we were into the COVID period there. And for better or worse, it's accelerated so much. Take the vaccines, for example, that the progress that's been made in terms of vaccines, which would have taken, 12, 14 years normally, it's happened over the course of a year. It's absolutely staggering because there's been a will and there's been money invested in it. And I think the same thing for a lot of technology, that necessity to drive, whether it's video interviewing, whether it's video conferencing, whether it's going to virtual events, I think there will be a sense of blending. I think there will be a natural reaction as and when people feel it's safe to go to physical events. I think there will be a real desire to go back and meeting people and laughing at people and laughing at people's funny names and shaking their hands because we've missed all that. So yes, I think those technologies are here to stay. And what's happened to take Zoom, for example. This isn't a Zoom, obviously, but I've had several Zoom calls today, as I'm sure most people listening to this have done that. I probably had pre-COVID, probably as many as I have in a week normally now. So we've embraced, there's been a sense of embracing technology. I think we're quite discerning about it. And I think we there have been some video conference facilities, for example, which were around pre-Zoom, which all of a sudden we didn't really like. They were a bit clunkier and unintuitive. So yes, it's great that people are harnessing new technologies, that those technologies have been accelerated as a necessity of COVID. I think we're more discerning as users in terms of thinking, do you know what? It's a great idea, but it's a bit clunky. And actually, do you know what? I'd really like to go and meet people in person again, because we can do that. And, 9 months down the line, who knows? But will those things be dropped entirely? No, they won't, because they're massive labor savers. do we want to be jumping on planes like we did to a certain extent? No, we won't be doing that. Like everything, I think the solution is probably somewhere in the middle.
I love that you said laughing at people instead of laughing with people.
You're, my mistake.
I want to party with you, cowboy.
That's exactly what he was thinking, so I'm glad he said it. I'd like to just say to all the listeners out there and that we have done this before. If you remember in the 1950s, the polio vaccine, we provided, I know in the US, we actually built a brand. It had a mascot. It was a civic duty, right? And companies got behind that and everybody got their vaccination. So we can do this. We don't have to use the word mandate, but God damn it. These things have to happen, but we overall, companies, the employees, we have to get a better idea of how we get there. And Neil, we appreciate you taking the time to talk to us about this. If listeners want to find out more about you, where would you send them?
So if you would go to employerbrandingadvantage.com, bit of a mouthful, I do apologize. Plenty of information on there, plenty of blogs, which you might want to listen to about subjects like this, right across the talent acquisition and EVP space. Come along and have a look at the website.
Love it.
Excellent.
Jolly
really
good.
Appreciate it, Neil.
Thank you, guys. Really good talking to you.
Another one in the can, Joel.
We out.
We out.
Bye now.
All right, Neil, best band from Liverpool, not named the Beatles.
Echo and the Bunnymen.
Fair enough.
Thank you for listening to Podcast with Chad and Cheese. Brilliant. They talk about recruiting. They talk about technology. But most of all, they talk about nothing. Anywho, be sure to subscribe today on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. We out.
The Jim Stroud Podcast explores the discoveries and trends forming the future of our lives. Brain-to-brain communication, robot bosses, microchip implants for workers, and artificial intelligence replacing human workers are all happening now. If you want to know what's happening next, subscribe now to the Jim Stroud Podcast.